in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Walcott.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside,
in anywhere that you can see a speaking ring. Listening head and skin, you're not where behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm feeling a bit refreshed after, so we had the bye the previous week and, you know, relatively relaxing Brisbane game. I'm feeling like we can start to plan for the rest of the season.
Hmm. So, it's interesting, Nick. Like, I probably, you know, it's dangerous to do these things, but if you have a feel of supporters from Twitter and the internet sites, you can gradually do a sort of focus group among supporters that you respect and whose opinion you value. And it's fair to say that I think for the Port game that supporters were more excited than I was. I thought that was a fairly scrappy game where we were slightly lucky to win. And I thought for the Brisbane game, I was fine with it. I thought it was a dominating performance. We didn't dominate. Our scoreboard didn't quite reflect as well as we played. Mm. And I actually thought that
it was very Richmond. And I had in my notes that the game should have been over. I should have been relaxed by quarter time. Like we should have been 6 goals ahead. But no. Hard way is the Richmond way.
Yeah, and unfortunately it's becoming systemic, so in no way does that make me feel better. That actually makes me feel worse. But overall, like, I actually didn't feel it was... A lot of people said it was a low-standard game. I didn't feel it was any noticeably worse than Port. Like, this is an inherently unscientific measure. But what I do get is the St. Kilda game, which is... This is all we're going to say about it. It was disgraceful. Like, I looked at the stats at one point in the second quarter, and oh my god, they were terrible. Like, it was...
Yeah, that first half does not bear repeating or thinking about.
Yeah, like, it's one thing to have a lot of goals kicked on you, maybe the other team's just getting lucky, which they did, but they also, they were just completely dominating the run of play. So, all we're going to say about that is, obviously, teams wanted, you know, they wanted someone to pay for that, and, you know, we dominated the game. And I thought we played okay. I thought the game was of reasonable standard. Mm.
The day is coming when the Lions are going to be less hopeless.
Like, yeah, they're clearly very up and down as a team.
For years I've not been scared by them at all, but actually now the future is, you know, if not coming into view, it's on the horizon.
Yeah, I must admit my perception of the game, it was changed slightly because it was interesting for me, because there were a couple of new prospects that I could sink my teeth into analytically, so that maybe impressed me overall impression of the game.
Well, by this stage of the season, and, you know, it had been relatively settled lineup, so, you know, throwing us a bone for a bit of interesting, you know, and it was... You know, do you want to start there, because that was perhaps the most interesting part of the match was from the very start. Big Ivan Soldo matching up against one of the league's better ruckmen in Stephen Martin.
Yeah. I mean, like, frankly, I've got to 4 minutes, roughly 4 minutes about in this podcast and haven't raised it yet, so I thought that was a lot of discipline. Mm.
No, I was impressed.
It's been a long time, Nick. You know, I mean, I was reflecting on this the last time we had a decent right prospect. Angus Graham was okay-ish. People sort of have forgotten in hindsight that very early on in his career he was having a semi-respectable game. Broke his leg in a game, then played out the remainder of the game while playing respectably, and, you know, we all got sort of quite excited about his toughness. Obviously he didn't turn out that well, but, you know, Adelaide were prepared to give up a top 50 pick for him. Never played, obviously had buyer's remorse immediately because they never played him. But, you know, he was okay. But if you go back through the Richmond's history, Nick, it's actually, like, it's been so long since we've had a decent ruck prospect. It depends if you count Broda Oddens as a pure ruck. But if you don't, like, our last pure ruck
con... Okay, well, Oddens was drafted more ruck than forward, but then played more forward than ruck and only, sadly, just blossomed as a ruckman and then went to Geelong.
Yeah, but anyway, let's simplify and let's say Otto was the last good ruck we had. You know, that's 15 years. So it's been a while, and I was not on the Solo hype train. Obviously, we talked about him because you'd met him, Nick, and before he'd come to Richmond. Yeah, look, and
he was coming from a mile back.
He was. I was. It's a good story, but I was never excited about him as a footballer. You know, not genuinely excited, but there was a moment... there was a couple of moments where I sat up and I said, hello, there's something here.
Yeah. So, Stephen Martin, the first time we played Brisbane, had 52 hit-outs. And this time he had 28. And I did not think he enjoyed the experience of Big Ivy getting his body into him and shielding him from the ball. One little bit?
No, there was actually a moment where Bigger Ivy poleaxed him.
Good times.
Now, if you look at his Stefan Ivy didn't play that many minutes. Ivy Junior didn't play that many minutes, and that's partly because he had his nose broken late in the fourth. But if you look at his hitouts and hitouts to advantage per minute, it was better than Martin's. Martin did beat him a few times.
Yeah, and look, Martin's no joke as a ruckman. He's fifth in the AFL in hitouts.
Yeah, but there were times where Ivy was dominating him physically. Mm. He was doing some interesting things, changing angle of attack. And do you know whose ruck work he reminded me of slightly?
No, but I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Greg Deer.
Yeah, there you go. That's a blast from the past.
It is, but, you know, sort of, and he was sort of similarly awkwardly around the ground. Mm. We'll come back to that. But, yeah, he's, yeah, and there was one moment he stuck the knee and, put a bruise on him that he'll be feeling in 3 weeks' time. And you could hear the oof on the camera. So, all in all, it was sort of, there's something there. I was not expecting that. And as I said, minutes per game, minutes per disposal, minutes per hit-outs, minutes per hit-out to advantage, all respectable. He did some awfully stupid stuff. Like, some of his... That kick around the corner he did in the sort of defensive half-back flank was extraordinary, but excusable from a fourth-game ruck who... And, Nick, let's just pause to reflect.
You do have to stick to your lane, and we'll return to this topic.
Every other player on that field has been best on ground probably 10 times in his career. Like, even in under-12s, you know, the most worst player out there, pick whoever you want, was the best player on his under-12s team.
Mm.
He's the best player on his under-15s team. On that Richmond out there, Soldo has never been the best player on any team he's played, has only just started playing, and he doesn't have the experience. So, round the corner snap on the defensive half-back line probably seems like a good idea. And yes, he was terrible in that defensive 50 marking contest late in the game, and the commentators rightly highlighted it, and he needed to do better. But he'd already had his nose broken at that point. He hasn't had much experience in that situation. And... you know, that's the thing about speculative ruck picks is they may get better or they may not, but at least he's good at something, and he is good. Mm. He's relatively good at rucking.
He didn't look good up forward in that centre half forward role, but you know, given the cost was exactly zero to acquire him, like he wasn't even on. Isn't like. He's been upgraded to the senior list, obviously, temporarily, but he's not even on the main list. Because he had no background in registered football 3 years ago. So, yeah, he's come a long way. Yeah, I'm enjoying his work.
I enjoyed watching him. I was disappointed when Nat came into the ruck.
And we love Nink. And Nink had a good game, actually.
He did, and maybe that's not coincidental that he actually got a chop out for a change.
What did you think about Nink as centre half forward?
I don't like it.
No, I thought it was at its best when he was, actually in packs and giving off little hand passes the same way he does when he's on the ball as a marking target. I might have to watch the tape again, but no, it was... wasn't a huge success. I would have hoped for a bit more.
No, and again, maybe there's an argument you can make that, well, he's barely done that at AFL level. You're talking about someone who's probably done that. He's probably played as a starting centre-half forward less than 10 games in his career. But
yeah, he had a year in Neathal when he was with the Swans, where he played mostly as a key forward.
But come on, playing in the Neathal, he was two bad injuries of playing against younger versions of us.
I mean, unless you're playing against the 12 first round draft picks in the GWS team.
No, you're playing against mate, friends of ours, but you're not playing against AFL level athletes.
No.
But yeah, so I can completely see why Soldo maybe dropped this week. And I still think probably our best team has Nank and Griff, fit and healthy Griff as the centre half forward slash ruck. But Soldo is not just about this year; he's about the long term, and that to me was actually the headline story.
Yeah, and thinking about what. Because, Ibi Senior retiring at the end of the year, if you don't have a viable backup, you've got to give up something to get one. And, I think we'll need another ruckman on the list, but we have to try less hard and give up less capital to get a ruckman. Ibi is capable of at least some semblance of competence.
I am such a nerd that I get excited about a viable backup ruck. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, me too. Hands in the air. What I was saying about staying in their lane, that was what impressed me the most about Nathan Broad's return to the senior team. Like, his kicking is never going to be great, but I thought he really stayed within his limitations and was a useful defender.
I asked this as a question, which I don't have I haven't made up my own mind up about yet. What's he given? 11 touches. What's he given that Jade Batchelor isn't?
He's more athletic. He can play smaller.
No, it's a bit less buff though, so can't play taller either.
Yeah. No, he can't play as tall. I was thinking about. When the commentators were saying about Dave Asprey playing every game, who's the backup plan? Is it Broad? Is it McIntosh? It's like, I didn't enjoy that train of thought. Actually, it's probably Grimes and one of Broad. Or McIntosh plays on the third tall forward.
And Garthwaite.
And Garthwaite. Yeah, true.
One thing I do think is, if you've got Asprey playing, Asprey is very conservative in his ball use, because he's played enough AFL to know what happens when he uses the ball. Broad has to be aggressive. Like, Richmond can't... 2017 Richmond, you need a lot of goers, and... Vossi, it was interesting having Vossi back. He's probably the most, if I was to pick someone to, had to make an accurate kick for my life, I'd probably almost pick Vossi first on the Richmond list. But he's also, he's not a dynamic ball mover. Just because it's how he is, and Broad needs to get and go. Like, there was one really nice moment where he faked a hand pass and broke the play open. He needs to keep doing that, because when you've got Asprey, you don't have Hooley playing, and you've got Vossi back. You need line breakers.
Absence has made the... I mean, I don't think absence has made the heart grow fonder. I mean, absence has made us stop taking him for granted.
I think Richmond Tiger Talk was a pretty basher-friendly
been a basher for a long time.
Yeah, I think 98% of our commentary about basher has been complimentary. I don't think... I no way do I feel that we take him for granted. while we're on the backline transition, I'm just going to put down that Jaden Short just had a shocker for no apparent reason. I've heard theories on the internet that he was playing more forward, which there may be something to it. But he also, like, just kicked the ball out of bounds off a kick-out, which he never does.
He never does. The kindest thing you could say was that his second half was better than his first half, which is good that he didn't completely disappear into his shell after a couple of shockers. But, no, he's had better games.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, hot take there, but yeah, I think it was safely his worst of the year.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Miles. Was there anyone else on the back line you wanted to discuss?
Just to finish off on the back line, I thought Camden was his usual solid self, and aside from having a complete shocker last week, he's put together a pretty solid season.
Yes. Well, again, you know my views on Camden McIntosh.
Yeah, on board.
Yeah.
Anthony Miles. He was fine.
Okay. So, a few people whose opinion on the internet, whose opinion I respect enough to repeat, thought, and I just put this out there, that he doesn't suit Richmond 2017. He's too slow. He doesn't run hard defensively enough. He just doesn't suit the current up and down game plan. But Nick, I didn't see it. Like I was watching for that. Like I was watching for the signs that Miles is like a fish out of water in the team. And you know what I noticed about Miles? He's changed his style of play to suit how we're playing in 2017. So a few times he just got the ball and without looking, he just went. Like he was very keen to play on. And he's always been, he's not a great user of the football. He's not bad, but he's always been clever with it. Like I've always found him sort of a productive user. And that's what I saw. I saw he went at 87%, by the way, which is not bad at all for a relatively inside player. And I saw a play well, quickly.
It was a more outside version of a traditionally very inside player, which is always, that's, he's probably being asked to play a role that he's not quite as well suited to play, but
that was the story on the club website as well, but what I've been saying in the VFL is you need to improve your outside game, your inside game is fine. But Nick, and that suits his game, but just watching it, he looked like a good player to me. He's always looked like a good player, but I thought his ball movement was effective, and I thought he was one of our better players on the day. Now, I know there are other opinions on that, but I can only go on what I see. The stats look good, and the eye test to me looks good.
Yeah, you'd always like a little bit more athleticism on the outside, but no, I wouldn't drop him.
Oh, God, no.
I thought it was a solid performance, and I know that Cochin's been resting up forward and been productive up forward all year, but did he spend a little bit more time up forward, and maybe having Miles in the team allows you to do that? So I'm completely fine with it.
Could be. Cochin also had 15 contested possessions, which is well above his season average. He was playing against a god-awful midfield, but could be. And just before we move on to Prestia, I think it is interesting. Yep, we do have to pay tribute to Dusty's 40 possessions, 14 clearances, 8 centre clearances, 12 inside 50s. I mean, two goals. Like, the guy's a freak.
Didn't get best on ground from both coaches. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and that. Thank you for mentioning that. It was Cochin who got the other best on ground, but
a good game too.
I think that is that surely came from Brisbane, because anyway.
He was great. The Brownlow is a two horse race, but the Brownlow could get freaky this year. We've never had a Brownlow where with two people above 30 votes, and I wouldn't rule it out.
Nah, No, because...
I don't think we've ever had one with two above 30.
Cochin's form's trailed off a bit, and I don't. He's not stealing votes. Like, I mean, aside from what you just said about the coaches' votes, I mean, surely, I don't think in the last four or five games, Cochin has stolen Trent Martin's votes.
No.
And that was with Murphy earlier.
The great secret to winning Brownlow is getting best on grounds rather than, you know, Cochin this year has almost always been in our best three or four players. But, yeah, that doesn't mean medals. Being best on ground does.
No, and being polite and having a nice haircut. Trent has nailed the getting votes formula, but I think Dustin's in the late Dane Swan zone is that he's so good now that the umpires can't ignore him.
I'm sure we'll talk about it at the time, but who the poor guy at the AFL whose job it is to make sure that Dusty doesn't drink too much in the night.
I don't think drink's been the problem with Dusty. Moving on, Prestia.
Well, he was the consensus third best on ground from the coaches from the job he did on Dane Zorko, and it was a pretty solid effort.
Yeah, well, so actually, on the advanced metrics, just an offensive output, he had his second best game of the season and was in our top three anyway.
Best game for him by disposal effectiveness for the season.
Yeah, so, was good with his ball use, and obviously, more importantly, he beat Zorko in head-to-head disposals and effectiveness, so Zorko did still have his moments. So I think he has rightfully got a lot of love and credit for the game.
Yes, more of that, please.
Exactly.
What about the forwards? We were down on our usual quota of small forwards.
I'm not sure. Going back to the structure issue, I'm not convinced it works. Like, I almost preferred it when we were going the abnormal strategy, you know, the sort of having too many, because, is it better to have a below-average centre-half forward or play another semi-decent small forward? You know, it's a classic question of, like, with the greatest respect to... Let's say when Soldo's playing forward. Shea Bolton is clearly better at being a small forward than Soldo has been at being a tall forward.
Yes.
So...
If you're trying to rank, our best players, Shea Bolton is very close to being in our best 22 players.
Probably is, and Soldo is not.
Soldo is not, no.
No.
So, I
don't have the answer here, but it was a different structure. Butler, my man Butler, had three, had another one touched on the line. Another one of his very good games, and is...
I enjoyed his work. I haven't seen the stats, but I'd imagine Dan Rioli's score involvements were pretty high.
No, I haven't seen them either. He was sort of... It was funny, like, the narrative from the commentators for a lot of the game was he hasn't looked... he looks slightly injured, and I wonder whether Dermy... That was from Dermy, actually. And good on Dermy, because he was actually
listening to us a month ago.
Sorry?
He was listening to us a month ago.
Yeah, like he's slow on it, but at least he noticed it. He's definitely not the... Like, there were games early in the year he was arguably our best player or definitely in our best three, and he's not that player at the moment. But, yeah, I don't know quite what it is, because he still did some... You know, that moment where he split the two Brisbane players and snapped that goal was, just wonderful. Classic goalie.
Even the first quarter one where... He helped contest it and then paddle the ball forward. I think it was for Butler's first goal, but that was a really nice piece of work. I'm so happy he's re-signed, by the way.
Oh, really? But, I mean, there was no real doubt about it at his age, was there?
He's got Ralph Carr as his agent. I'm just,
Was that? I thought that was Bolton.
Oh no, you're right. Oh, okay. Mm. Well, I was needlessly worried then.
But the AFL,
we haven't been affected by it, but clubs, including us, are going after draftees out of their first contract at the end of 2 years. A lot harder these days, and I reckon there would have been clubs. Well, there should have been clubs sniffing around. So yeah, it just made me feel better.
So for what it's worth, Nick, which is probably zero, he had 13 touches, and his career average both this year and last year was 10 a game. So actually, for all the hype about him being down in the commentary, for all, it wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't too bad. Jason Castagna. How frustrating is he?
Sorry?
How frustrating is Jason Castagna?
Yeah, he's in Enigma, because, you know, that I've been thinking about that Drock Mark he did, you know, where... a crucial moment in the game where he fumbled it, like he had it and he fumbled it and it sort of hit him on the, what was it, the back or the head or something, and he dropped it. Oh, he gets to so many good spots.
And he creates things with these hard running. Because he's a genuinely good endurance athlete as well as being very quick. I mean, actually, oh, slightly off topic, but did you see that post from a couple of weeks ago? They listed they've got GPS data on the 10 fastest players in the AFL, and we had four of them, and none of them were Dan Butler, which did surprise me a tad.
Mm. Yeah. Who was number one?
I don't remember. The four for us were Menadue, Rioli, Grimes, and Castagna. Yeah, Grimes, I was mildly surprised with. I mean, no, he's not slow, but yeah, I didn't think he was that quick.
I noticed if you go on a couple of the websites, Punt Road on particularly, probably the most interesting debate right now is about Castagna, precisely for this reason. Mm. So he's hard to pick.
He's kicked 19 goals, 15 for the season, so he's just slightly below average. He's reasonably productive, and it's the wasted opportunities that really that kill you. But if he wasn't creating the opportunities in the first place, I don't know.
Hot take: I want him in the finals team, round one. Make finals. I'm not sure that you don't drop him before then to get him some confidence. He needs touch of the football.
And I can see
why they don't drop him, because they need him in the team every week, but I think he needs to get a bit more confidence in his ball. But anyway, he's frustrating.
He's frustrating. Look, finishing off on the forwards, Jack was good. We love Jack.
Yep, yes, agreed.
Mm. Was there anything else you wanted to say from the game?
No, that was it.
Well, one of the, all due respect to the good people who run the club website, but literally my favourite piece of content for the week is when they do the VFL report, and very sadly, for whatever reason, they weren't able to get coaches' comments on the game from this week, which is a shame, because I think it was perhaps one of the best performances for the year, that beating an affiliated team badly, loads of good performances, an injury scare that thankfully has turned out to be less, you know, not as bad as it first looked. Returning heroes. It pretty much had it all.
Okay, so three people are most interested in that game. Honourable mention to a fourth.
Oh, you've only got three?
Oh, okay, four. But I'm prioritising, Nick. just let me tell the story here. So I was interested in what Graham did. Very much. How Griffith's return went. How Bolton went, and how Lennon did. I'm interested in all those four for 2017 because all those four could potentially play round one of the finals. Now, of those, Graham had 14 contested possessions at half time. God, that kid is a man child.
He's a beast, yeah. And the tackle, he tackles as well. He gets a lot of tackles.
So let's hope that ankle, which was listed as tests, you know, if that is accurately portrayed and he's out for 1 week at the most, fan-bloody-tastic, because I still think he has something to give in 2017. I know others are saying, you know, a lot of smart people are saying, like, let's just hope he plays
Get him the chance to build him up, yeah.
But he, I mean, 14 contested possessions to a half and Burfield 40, no joke. Shai Bolton?
No.
Oh, well, sorry, Griffiths returned, looked credible, looked like he could play AFL football again.
He had his typical array of stats by half-time. 2 goals, 9 possessions.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing, you know, and yeah, so that's very exciting.
Oh, thank God for that.
And because, let's not forget, Griff can ruck semi-decently, so it could give Nankish a chop out. And that'll be important. And Shai Bolton. Woo! Got 5 goals.
Okay, a couple of them were pretty easy, but at least one of them was, he's good. He's got talent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Lennon was okay.
Yeah, Lennon was fine. Tyson Stengel had a pretty good game. 19 disposals for a small forward is a lot.
Yes.
Hmm.
But, you know,
he's not as relevant in the 2017 discussion, although, you know, I'm very happy that he's played a couple of games. I think you've nailed the most relevant ones, but I just wanted to mention a couple others quickly that, you know, it's been fair to say that Mabio Chole's been one of the disappointments of the season down at the VFL, but he's they've moved him back to centre half back, he's had a pretty good game. And another one who I'm very interested in is Callum Moore, who's had 17 disposals, 6 marks, 5 inside 50s, kicked a goal. He looked as raw as sushi last year when he was gifted a game, but he's had a bit of an interrupted year with injury. But he's a super athletic, hard running. Relatively tall, you know, he's probably a third tall forward, but his form's pretty good. He's not that far from senior football, which is, I was pretty interested by.
Yeah, and if he keeps up that hard running and that speed, he potentially suits the high-pressure game plan.
Well, he does, because he's, saying before about the quickest people in the team, his draft camp testing is, easily belongs with that group. He's that quick and a very solid 6'4".
Yeah. So, Nick, anything else with the VFL?
No.
Okay, Nick, I just want to quickly say I've had this in my notes for about 10 weeks and forgot to mention it. Considering there are so many new and good Richmond podcasts, I'd just like all our listeners who, if you're this far into the podcast, you're probably fans, to, if you could please put on iTunes reviews if you have half a second. Only good ones, of course. And, you know, feel free to particularly wax lyrical about our excellent production qualities and clear clarity. It'd be great because it's just
content, endure the sound quality.
Yes. You know, we always appreciate new listeners and more people to bounce ideas off.
I gotta say that the SEN one hasn't moved me at all, but I've frankly been jealous by the Big 41 that they've got. In doing interviewing Mark Dragosevich and Joel Bowden, they're two of the people who would have been very high on my list of past players who I wanted to interview.
Indeed. Speaking of podcasts, really good one, the Channel 7 podcast, which is, you know, conceptually brilliant, obviously set up by a very smart guy. the Richo interviewed Benny Gale recently. And there's a couple of hot takes I wanted to share with you, Nick. Have you had a chance to listen to it yet?
No, I haven't. I've downloaded it, but I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
So, I mean, you know, obviously Benny was very... Benny the player, we were both very fond of. We both were 25 when we played ourselves as adults in tribute to Benny. It was just interesting hearing about, you know, how even in the early 90s, how Tasmania was still a world apart, and how when Benny was growing up, he didn't really dream of AFL because it was too far away. You know, he was growing up in northern Tasmania, and Victoria was still so far away, and he grew up watching one quarter of AFL football, sorry, VFL football a week, and, you know, he knew all the local stars, but didn't really know the VFL stars, and how it was still just a call when, he'd get a phone call to tell he was drafted. But, you know, if to anyone who thinks that, you know, even Benny, who came to the AFL a little bit raw and, you know, looking like he was a bit inexperienced, Benny's father represented Tasmania at state level. You know, there's... You know, these people who make it, they make it for a good reason. They have some pretty sound genetics.
I know. It's a harsh fact that our children have to deal with, that they had virtually zero chance of being senior AFL footballers at conception.
And just the other thing is, the other thing I wanted to mention was... you know, Benny's a chief executive. You know, it's hard to love the chief executive of your club unless you win a premiership. But he did make a point that he did have a little tear after the North game. And that made me relate to him a bit better because I must admit I found the North game, the North final, obviously, very emotionally difficult. So
it's hard to grade the trauma of the finals.
It is, but like hearing Benny, that hearing his reaction to that sort of made me relate to it. Yeah. Anyway,
No, it's good. Got GWS again. So do we owe them one? Or do they owe us one?
I think we do. Like, I'm not sure we owe them one. I think the Richmond Football Club owe its supporters one.
Yeah, that's true. If anything, there'd be a bit of, did you forget to leave out 80% of Brett DeLidio's medical bond when we did the trade?
Yeah, and look, they actually desperately need a win. They're an extremely good football team, and I still think they're going to win the premiership. And they've been losing games recently that they shouldn't have. And
And the betting line for this one is really close.
Yeah, and they look last week against the Swans. They had an injury during the game. They had a laid out, you know. And Jeremy Cameron, by the way, who's been ruled out for our game. He's in the Champion Data's All-Australian team already. Like, he's having a superb season.
There was an article on the best goal kickers in the AFL. And it may surprise you to know that there wasn't a lot of Richmond players featured prominently. But Jeremy Cameron, best kick for goal in the AFL, adjusting for where he takes his shots from.
Yeah, well, we all know that from last game, don't we? But, yeah, look... I think this is a massive game. Now, it's hard at the end of the year. It starts to feel like every game is incredibly important for the finals chances. And, you know, realistically, I don't think, we're probably going to finish between 5th and 8th. And, you know, sort of, we don't seem to have a strong preference for any... Like, it's hard to argue we have a really strong MCG bias. So I'm not saying anything game's critically important for the finals, but it just feels that way. It's a really important game.
I prefer not to travel interstate.
Sorry?
I definitely prefer not to travel interstate.
Of course, but, it just feels like a very big game for... You know, you talk about data points a few weeks ago about when we beat Port. It was another data point about a good performance showed that we were a legit team. To me, this seems like a really important data point.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, Cameron aside, you know, they're a really good team. Yeah, they've got a Rolls-Royce midfield. They're one of the best at denying possession to the other team, best clearance team in the AFL, which I think is going to be perhaps a make or break for us. I mean, God, goal kicking is always a huge challenge, but yeah, we can win. We're underdogs, but I'd like to see Shea Bolton, actually. He nearly won it last time. I think a little more X factor might be what we need.
Yeah, I mean, when you take on the big dogs, you gotta go for the high variance. Well, I agree. Mm. And Shea Bolton's is a high variance selection. He might give you 3 goals. He might give you 5 touches and 0 goals. He might give you 3 goals and 5 touches, by the way. But you know what I mean. There's a high variance in the output he'll give you. I think you do have to do that with a team like GWS. Unfortunately, we're taping this at the very worst time, just before selection is announced, so we can't analyze that.
I know, poor timing.
But in fairness, you are on the other side of the world, so you've done very well to record the podcast. Yeah, look, I think it's a huge game.
The timing was very good to be doing a very long flight. Actually, had a discussion in the queue for Euro Disney with another Richmond supporter about how bad the St Kilda game was on Tuesday.
Oh, I mean, it was unforgivably bad. And the problem was that you could write off the one bad performance against Adelaide as an aberration when it was only one, and when it became two, it became a problem. Now, that's the thing about GWS. This is why this game becomes crucial, that you know, we put on another really good performance, be happy. Now, if we lose 11-12 to 12-11, I'll be okay.
Mm.
If we get flogged, I'll obviously be devastated. And if we lose sort of like we did in the first GWS, having 5 more shots a goal, it'll just be so frustrating. So,
we play a lot of close games. So, you know, we've had all different variations on heartbreak and elation, but I'd like some elation this week.
This might be sacrilege for this podcast, but because of the concessions that the AFL gave them, I hate the GWS more than any other team in the AFL.
Ooh, big call.
I'm sitting down, but
it's a big call.
It's a very, very hot take by the standard of this, so I'd love to beat them.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.